today in Italy was the third general strike that they called. So it's big. It's awesome seeing all the news from it. It's really good. You had Greta Thunberg, Francesca Albanese, a bunch of other people joined the rally. So it's really well spread. And the union support. I mean, I translated their declaration, their joint declaration, with a bunch of community organizations. But their vision is broader than probably any political party that we have here. 1 million public housing units, €2,000 monthly, minimum monthly wage, 4-day work week. I don't know, that stuff's been inspiring, even though I've otherwise been tired here.
Well, it's funny, you know, because over the summer season for Stick Together, I'm going to do a program about the 8-hour day. I said 8-hour week to somebody and said, I go for that. I go for that.
I would go for that.
But we've got lots of pretty grim headlines, actually. I want to start with the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, who's calling on the Albanese government to explain why it has been hiding the contents of a newly released English transcript of a February the 17th interview with Nauruan President David Adiang, in an extraordinary example of their ongoing secrecy about the billions in taxpayer dollars they are spending on offshore processing. The government refused to release a separate transcript under FOI and also refused to give it to the Senate, deepening already serious concerns about transparency. As a last resort to get the information on the public record tonight, Senators David Pocock and David Shoebridge have read an English transcript of the interview onto the Senate Hansard under parliamentary privilege, which is, going for it.
Mm-hmm.
President Adiang states that individuals have been living safely in the Australian community. As such, Australians deserve to know why the government is spending up to $7 billion to punish them offshore. The transcript also reveals that negotiations for the new offshore agreement have been underway since last year, contradicting the Albanese government's public statements and raising questions about why these details were kept from Australians. The president of Nauru have given his own media more clarity about the deal than the Australian government. Head of advocacy from the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre said two different stories are now on the record. One is being told to the people of Nauru and another to the people of Australia. Either the Nauruan president is being dishonest, the Albanese government is being dishonest, or Australia has misled Nauru. No matter which version is true, it exposes a system marked by secrecy, confusion and a lack of accountability and extremely high risk of corruption. The government's secrecy on these issues is part of a wider pattern of corruption and cover-ups that have plagued offshore processing for more than a decade. Millions of taxpayers' dollars have flowed through secretive contracts linked to fraud, biker gangs and mismanagement. An expose by 60 Minutes has recently revealed in detail that one of the contracts for their arrangements are given to a company run by members of the Finks biker gang. Beans have now disappeared into a system built on cruelty and deception. The ASRC is calling on the Albanese government to release all contracts, correspondence and agreements related to offshore processing and offshore warehousing in Nauru and Papua New Guinea. It also calls on the government to end offshore detention and stop outsourcing Australia's legal responsibilities to other nations. A humane, transparent onshore system would protect people's safety, save taxpayer money and restore integrity to Australia's refugee program. You know, of course, that the Nauru option that they've created is to put people who are refugees into indefinite detention.
The solidarity breakfast claim is that we put the government into the people's administration.
Yeah. You got anything else to add?
I feel like the other bit of, kind of changing tack, the other bit of federal news that I've been keeping an eye on this week has been the government succeeding in amending the Federal Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act. They managed to pass it by securing a deal with the Greens for better protection of native forests, banning fast-tracking of new coal and gas projects, and reining in ministerial discretion. It's, you know, I think across the aisle, members of parliament have discussed it being potentially a limited amendment. More needs to be done. Labor's Senator Michelle Ananda Raja described the bill as, quote, not perfect, and the Greens described it as falling woefully short on climate. I think in particular, something that is of interest is that they've managed to include in the amendments a quote, what has been described as a pay to destroy offset scheme. So a fund that would essentially allow developers to pay into a restoration fund as a part of the approvals process. So perhaps not up to scratch in terms of actually protecting the environment.
One of the things I find so fascinating about the government's approach to this has been the messages coming out of the government. I actually get on my email for some reason or other, I'm obviously on some sort of list, but the Labor Party sent out a message that congratulates themselves on the passing of the bill, and it tells us why it's so good. And I'll just see if I can find it.
I think one of the other things while you're finding that is that the Labor Party has kind of presented this amendment and this bill as a meeting point between the interests of business and environmental protections, which I think is a red flag.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yes. but I think that's, we've got Don Sutherland coming up on the show later on, and I'd really like to hear his thoughts about the ways that the Labor government and Murray Watt in particular have really courted the interests of businesses and companies that essentially rely on environmental destruction for profit, how central they've been in this process of amending and regulating some of our environmental laws. So I'll be looking forward to talking to Don about that a bit more in the
This is what Murray Watt's. This is an email that's put out. And its byline is, we've done it. We've passed it, basically. With your support, we're able to deliver on our commitment to strengthen our environmental laws, better protecting the places we love for generations to come. By the end of the week, the Albanese Labor government will establish Australia's first ever independent National Environmental Protection Agency. This will give us an environmental watchdog with real teeth, one clear set of rules, proper monitoring, and real consequences for big business doing the wrong thing. Okay.
I think this is
the key wins. Every project must leave the environment better off.
Mm-hmm.
New strong national environmental standards to improve outcomes and the quality of decision making. Defining unacceptable impacts on matters of national environmental significance for the first time, providing a critical safeguard against irreversible loss. Tell that to the
Duke and Gore.
Strong penalties and enforcement to make sure big businesses do the right thing. Fast-tracking renewable energy projects to assist in the renewable energy transition. Read gas. End land clearing to protect more of our precious habitat.
Yeah, Beetaloo Basin.
Yeah, tell us all about it, Bright Boy.
I do think the kind of saga around establishing the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is a really great demonstration of the kind of hold and reach the fossil fuel industries have over government policy around the environment. I think it's been pretty compellingly reported that Tanya Plibersek was stepped down from the environmental portfolio because she wasn't keeping fossil fuel interests, particularly in Western Australia, happy enough. She was pushing too hard for the EPA to actually be a functional body.
Well, it's interesting. One of the themes in some of my headlines this week is around how the federal government is pushing things through without following proper process.
Mm-hmm.
So the Centre for Public Integrity have put out a warning saying that they're pretty worried about the weak process, strong powers, a troubling legislative trend. And they want, and it's particularly about what they're calling the EPBC Act, which is the Environment Act, all those letters. We are deeply concerned by the government's push to progress the EPBC Act reforms, and they always use the word reforms, before the Senate committee has even finished receiving public submissions, and by its earlier rush to pass the FOI amendment bill in the House, again before the relevant committee has reported. We wish we could say these concerns are new in this space, but they are not. Last parliamentary term, we saw this government push through three major reforms to the Commonwealth electoral finance laws with similar flouting of good legislative processes. These moves reflect a troubling disregard for transparency, participatory lawmaking. They come at a cost in terms of good policy, legitimate government, and public trust. And the thing that really showed this was the, you'll remember on our horizon was the issue of conflating police and ministers in cancelling welfare payments to people accused of a serious violent or sexual offence. Now, Labor, the Anti-Poverty Centre have been keeping a really close eye on this, and they've put this forward. The same thing happened when this law has been passed. Today, the government has successfully granted, and this is November 26, granted police and ministers new powers to cancel welfare payments for people accused of a serious violent or sexual offence, disposing with the presumption of innocence and removing the right to due process on the simple basis of a person's income. Labor defied calls from 116 legal and academic experts plus 64 organisations representing welfare recipients, First Nations people, people with disability, family violence survivors, legal advocates and community services to abandon Schedule 5, which was introduced as a late amendment to an unrelated Social Security bill on the 29th of October after the Social Security and other legislation amendments. The government has hoped this draconian new power could be slipped in unnoticed, waiting until after inquiries into the bill by the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Human Rights, the Senate Committee, Community Affairs Legislative Committee and Senate Standing Committee for the Security of Bills concluded before quietly introducing it as a bill passed the lower house, since then dogged questioning from senators including Lydia Thorpe, David Pocock and Penny Allman Payne, as revealed Labor's careful scheme to hide this change and avoid all security. So they're using this whole process of getting in major, they are quite draconian outcomes.
Well, it brings us even...
Class war.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here as well, like you've got written, as we go into Disability Week, there's been a whole bunch of health HSU, the Health Services Union, amongst other disability advocacy groups, and just civil society has pushed back against the Allen government doing very much the same thing through a child protection bill. They put in a last minute sort of weird little amendment that would see the disability regulator recommended by the coronial inquiry into disability rolled into a greater regulator that would oversee everything from homelessness support to child protection services to disability protection services.
Yeah, I know. It's extraordinary.
Massively eroding the independent oversight of a body that has been, that is familiar to folks with disability and massively undermining an already failing state government that has recently seen the Victoria Police take charge of similar amendments to extend their powers, now having a designated area in the CBD for the next 6 months. I'll just read maybe just from the National Indigenous Times. Victoria Police have declared the entire Melbourne CBD, along with parts of surrounding suburbs, a designated area for the next 6 months. The declaration will give police expanded stop and search, move on powers across central Melbourne. The order takes effect on Sunday and will remain in place until the 29th of May 2026, with Victoria Police saying that they will be, quote, commencing further safety measures in the CBD ahead of the declaration's beginning. Under the legislation, it is an offence to prevent or resist police conducting a pat-down search, electromagnetic wanding, or removing items of outer clothing such as headwear, scarves, jacket, etc. Police may also require a person to remove any face covering if they reasonably believe it is worn primarily to conceal identity or protect from the effect of crowd-controlling substances, i.e. pepper spray.
That one gets me. You can't protect yourself from pepper spray.
Yeah.
That's...
The thing is that this coincides with a report that the Human Rights Law Centre released, that even though, you know, technically racial profiling in Victoria Police
yes,
has stopped
right.
or whatever, the actual findings are that First Nations are 15 times more likely to be stopped and searched. African people are 27 times more likely to be stopped or chased. This while the CBD 6 months, people like to talk about China being authoritarian or something like that. I don't know if they have a 6 month lockdown on a police enforced lockdown in a CBD.
And as Liberty Victoria says, the use of the designated area powers will allow police to circumvent the usual legal safeguards against unwarranted police intrusion. Normally, police require reasonable grounds to suspect that a person is carrying something illegal or prohibited before they can be searched. We also know that the powers will disproportionately be used against First Nation people and other people of colour. We know there are real issues with racial profiling when it comes to searching.